You are listening to. First Gen Teachers Lens.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast. In this episode, we talk about the pros and cons of standardized testing with Hedrick Nichols. I was looking forward to this episode, finding somebody that had some whereabouts about standardized testing, and we got our guest. So as always, please like, review, on wherever First Gen Teacher Lens is streaming. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcast. Now let's get back to the episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast. Today, we have a special guest. Her name is Hedrick Nichols. Got that right?
You got that right. Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing well. I was nervous, you know, because I'm assuming people botch your name all the time, but I'm glad I got it right. So this episode is going to be about standardized testing, which I think is a hot button issue during this whole school year. I feel like a lot of teachers like myself are feeling this kind of overbearing kind of anxiety of, hey, we have to test our kids during still an international pandemic. So I do have a list of four questions just to kind of discuss this issue, and hopefully listeners can get something out of it, maybe a new perspective, maybe we could quell their anxiety for just a moment. So my first question is, how has COVID changed your perspective on testing?
You know what? I don't think COVID has really changed my perspective on testing. Texas just spent $388 million paid to Pearson Assessment, and I can't think of the name of the company out of the UK. And all of that money that is going to assessment, we don't have an intervention plan. You know, it's great to collect data. Wonderful. How much do you weigh? 250 pounds. Super. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what should I do now? If you don't have a game plan for how you're going to actually use the data to close quote unquote learning gaps, then what is the point of collecting data on that scale? Mm-hmm. I would much rather see $388 million being put into intervention and even in accelerated instruction to be proactive, because everybody doesn't have a learning gap. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Some kids need to be challenged. And so if we can do more with that, except for looking back to see what we missed, mm-hmm. and put that money into looking forward and plugging in what we need, that's a way better use of the money. And I've always thought that. I think that a two-hour testing block in elementary and a four-hour testing block for middle school and high school is really more a test of, can you sit still for 4 hours? Can you mm-hmm. focus for 4 hours? It does not necessarily test whether you can actually, I can't sit still. I mean, my teacher certification exams, mm-hmm. you know, I loved that I could get up, I could walk out, I could come back in, and I had a four-hour window, but I also had some freedom. I was not confined to my chair, no, you can't go to the bathroom. I wasn't confined for 4 hours. That feels like jail. And we're talking about, I teach middles, so 11, 12, and 13-year-old kids. Mm-hmm. And especially in this year, when there's so much loss, so much trauma, so mm-hmm. much upheaval, mm-hmm. You know, Texas is leading I don't know if it's Texas or Houston, I really can't recall. We're leading the nation in evictions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we got a lot of people who've had to move back in with mama and them and auntie and them, and have just really mm-hmm. been unhoused. And now we're going to say, don't worry about all that, baby. Come to school, even if you're at home, and sit still for 4 hours and take this test. That is an awful situation anytime, but this year it's inhumane. So
Yeah, I agree with the latter part. It's inhumane on so many magnitudes, especially for the communities that are affected, which are the like POC communities, unfortunately. You know, they face this, you know, aspect of school prison pipeline. You know, being from New York City, I know that we're probably one of the most segregated school communities out there, where there's redlining. You know, if you're on the Upper West Side, right, that's where the money's at. If you're in like a poor area, let's take Southside Jamaica, for example, or where I was born at, right? There's limited resources, right? So adding another test to that is further penalizing like students who really need more so, like you said, push, support, and then not really challenging those kids that, you know, are, you know, excelling in these courses. So I think it is, from my perspective, it's just been kind of very negative in terms of like how our government really is pushing for this state that it seems so unnecessary, especially talking about learning loss, which is to me a social construct. Yeah, it's a social construct, period. And
about the social construct, if STAR testing or ITBS or what was right before STAR, TASK and tax and all of those, if any of those had made a difference, they have had since the 80s to make a difference. Alex, go back and look at the data. We have not, quote unquote, closed the learning gap since the 80s. So obviously all of this influx of money that the testing companies are, you know, cha-ching, cha-ching, right? That obviously isn't doing anything to change the face of education.
Right.
And I do not mean we don't need data. We absolutely do. I collect data all the time. I am simply saying that high stakes testing has not made a positive impact on learning gaps, quote unquote, so far since the 80s. Count up. How many years is that?
That's like over what?
It's 50? Over your lifetime. Am I right?
Yeah, it's definitely over my lifetime.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm saying, what are we doing? And the thing that I'm most afraid of is that they will use the people who think it makes good sense to spend this money on assessments, that these are the same people who are going to actually take the money out of schools who don't do well. They're going to use this to further. I think the gaps will be bigger. I don't think they're going to say, oh my God, these schools in this neighborhood, they're not doing well. Let's take some tax dollars and move them from this school that's doing well into these communities that really need it. That's not about to happen. We know that.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah.
So for my second question, I guess we kind of touched upon it. What changes would you make to standardized testing? Because like in my perspective, I think, you know, the standards to me, you know, are a benchmark, right? Which I think students do need. However, the way we administer it should be changed. So I'm just curious, what changes would you make to overall standardized testing?
Once again, I would really take, I would take the money out of it. It's kind of like places who've legalized marijuana, it's decriminalized and they have a lot less issues surrounding it. And I would do that with high stakes testing. I mean, you don't need a $388 million testing industry in a state that is between, depending on who you ask, 40 or 43rd in the nation. We are 43rd in the nation in education and number 2 in GDP in the country, number 9 in the world. So what I would do is I would take the money out of all of these assessments, and I would rather put it into things like, and a lot of people don't like MAP, but I like MAP. I don't know if you know MAP testing?
I've heard of it, but like, can you elaborate on it?
Yes, it's an adaptive test so that you kids take fall and spring, and you get to, it measures growth.
Right, yeah.
Is adaptive so that if you do well on this question, it sends you to a higher question. If you miss this question, it sends you to a lower question. So it really kind of assesses where kids are. Why do we need normed tests? You know, the truth of the matter is everyone is different.
Right.
You know, some kids are going to go to college. Some kids are going to be brilliant electricians. Some kids are going to, you know, go and train horses. we're all very different. And so the fact that we have to have a normed test in this age and time, when we are really looking at how diverse we really are and how many ways there are to show learning, mm-hmm. you know, I like in classrooms, for example, portfolios are a mm-hmm. much better yeah, way. Yeah, standard-based portfolios are a great way that you could actually literally carry, have an e-portfolio from a second grader that kid takes all the way to 12th grade. Mm-hmm. You can see, you know, advisor? Yeah, no, you know, before the advisor, the person who lets people in the college, I can't.
Admissions?
Admissions, yeah. As an admissions person, mm-hmm. I would love to be able to see who this person was by being able to look at a snapshot from this kid's educational career, as opposed to looking at, oh, that this child on this day sat still for 4 hours and did this.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a finite test where mm-hmm. it really doesn't measure. I think what you're hitting on is, like, you know, you got your kinesthetic learners, right? Your visual learners, where, you know, at times these tests, which are so arduous, right, and you have to cope through this copious math work. I'm thinking about like the SATs, ACTs, right, and then that just literally decides your future, whether or not you get into a good you know, four-year school, or, like, you know, you make yourself applicable to these other universities, which to a lot of, for me personally, like being a first generation first college graduate student, it was daunting. Because, like, I was just like, if I mess up, my whole life is messed up in a way, right? Yeah. And that's the pressure that a lot of kids face. And I think we're leading into my third question, which is it possible to create an equitable learning environment with testing?
Oh, is it possible? Yes, it is. Again, a portfolio. Yeah. is a perfect example of that. Because if I have a kid who has to, let's say we read Macbeth. Mm-hmm. One child wants to talk about the real nuts and bolts of it, the plot, the action, the different kinds of literary content, the different kind of literary, anyway, don't get me started. They want to talk about the nuts mm-hmm. and bolts of the book as a literary work. And then you get others mm-hmm. who really, they got into the characters and the story. Maybe they want to develop a play where they discuss it, or have a round table, or have a Socratic seminar about mm-hmm. it. You know, so if I need to make sure that these kids can analyze the novel, maybe somebody wants to write me a song about it and mm-hmm. really analyze the whole thing in a song, or a comedic sketch. All of those things are possible. I don't really need to have my kids take a 40-question multiple choice test mm-hmm. that someone constructs, that a testing company constructs, to tell me that they read and understood the books. There are so many ways to show learning. And so I think that an equitable way to show learning, I am all about portfolios. And I think that right. if we use standards-based grading, we look at the standards, we look at the, well, here in Texas, we have TEKS. We look at those standards and let kids show learning in the way they want to show learning. Then you'll get not only a good measure of what their learning looks like and what they've learned, but you'll also get happier, healthier students who mm-hmm. turn out to be happier, healthier adults. Right. And not, you know, not kids who are, I mean, you know what the suicide rate is in under youth?
It's probably astronomical now.
It has a lot to do with pressure.
Right. Right. Only one can imagine now for those kids who do have mental health issues. I think like even for teachers as well, like it's all across the board, like where, you know, there's this cliche saying, like, you know, with the state, hey, we're going to push a state exam down your throat, but make sure you're taking care of yourself, like with your mom. That's the biggest hypocrisy I've heard this entire year. And last year, I knew it wasn't going to happen because, like, you know, we just got here in New York, we just got pushed online. And then mm-hmm. I knew for a fact, like, all right, state testing is out the window. Like, it happened what, a week or two before. So, but that's the biggest thing where, I like saw like the hypocrisy within certain state administrators and stakeholders and the government just saying, hey, teachers, we love you, but here's all this mess that you have to deal with. It's like that GIF or GIF with the dog that everything's on fire and he's saying it's fine and then drinking a cup of Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's my life. Like literally, I show that kids to that GIF all the time. This is how we all feel right now, which leads me into my last question, which is I'm struggling with it personally. What can teachers do now to help their most vulnerable students in regards to standardized testing?
In regards to standardized testing, we can be honest. Mm-hmm. I know that, for example, there are public charters all over the country who are sending messages home and saying your students must show up to take the STAR.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're saying. But the truth of the matter is, there's a German word, it's called Übergriff, and I can't think of the right English word for it. It's when they can't tell you what to do with your child. They can't tell you what to do with the health of your household. Mm-hmm. So literally, there is an opt-out. Literally, there is, you know, your educational agency, whatever state you are in, has an opt-out. Even if your kids are in high school and they have to have the EOC to graduate, et cetera, et cetera. If you do enough research, you know, it's a kind of a bullying, and I don't like that. And so I would just say, make sure that you find out what your rights are as a parent and do what's right for your household, for your family.
Right.
That's first. And then especially if you're taking care of grandma and great grandma, I know in Texas, we're only about 12% of the state is vaccinated and we have variants and cases are climbing again.
Right.
So I'm not sending my child out the house.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Point blank period. I mean, you're right. I know for New York State, there's the option for the Common Core to opt out. Right. Parents ask about that all the time. I had one parent that was just like, the test doesn't really assess anything. I'm going to opt them out every year. So then if you have multiple parents doing that, then the test itself becomes sort of diminished in a way, because like, what are you assessing? You're not, the data is skewed, right? Because you're not assessing your total school cohort, right? So it becomes, you know, very touch and go subject where some parents be like, hey, you sure I can opt out? I'm like, yeah, that's your legal right. Like nobody can force you to take this exam. The only person that can enforce it is probably you onto your child, which will in turn probably complain about it and then be like, all right, I'm gonna take this test, probably just breeze through it, so I just say I took the test. But I guess another question, kind of off topic, but I know you run a podcast as well. Where can we find you on social media, your podcast, and just let the people know about that?
Well, the cool thing is my name is very unique. It's H-E-D as in Dora, R-E-I-C-H. So Hedrick, that's it. So at Hedrick on Twitter, Hedrick Nichols on Instagram. You can find me at Hedrick on Facebook, Hedrick on LinkedIn. My website is Hedrick.com. And my YouTube is YouTube/Hedrick. My podcast, Anchor/Hedrick. So it's really kind of practical. Mm-hmm. And if you Google my name, you can find me on all those spaces. And I would love to, you know, learn with you, learn about you, have you learn from me. And you can find me at Friday nights on YouTube Live at 7 p.m. and on at 5 a.m. drive time, Monday mornings on wherever you listen to your podcast. And those times are central.
All right. I want to thank you so much for joining the First Gen Teacher Lens. It was a pleasure to have you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for having listened to the First Gen Teacher's Lens. We'll see you here next time.